Welcome to the Museum of Craft and Design's exhibition titled Fight and Flight, Crafting a Bay Area Life, on view through September 10th, 2023. The exhibition consists of the work of 23 different artists from the Bay Area, and we will describe four of their works momentarily. The gallery that houses the exhibition features very high 24-foot ceilings and gray concrete floors. The walls are painted white. It is mostly a large open rectangle, broken up by an 8-foot-wide wall about 15 paces in front of the entryway, and a Z-shaped series of walls at the rear of the gallery. There are a few areas with pedestals or low platforms on the floor, which we will describe. Here's a little bit about the exhibition. There are an infinite number of stories in the San Francisco Bay Area, a region of 3 major cities, 9 counties, and 7 million residents. Whether natives or transplants, we all have reasons for living here. We cherish long roots in the region, or we have forged ties since arriving here, creating chosen families and settling into cultural communities. We enjoy individual freedom, see opportunity, and make careers here. Though droughts, wildfires, and other climate change disruptions have put us on notice, we appreciate the beauty of Northern California and bask in its Mediterranean-like weather. We take in these pleasures and simultaneously face our particular Bay Area dystopia of astronomical living costs, income inequality, and gender, political, and racist violence. Bay Area artists are among those who struggle to navigate the landscape in crisis. Fight and Flight, Crafting a Bay Area Life offers a view into our arts ecosystem. Produced by contemporary artists who have called the region home, the works are evidence of what has been done under challenging circumstances. Unsurprisingly, the exhibited projects are diverse and nuanced in regards to the styles explored, formats elected, and tones struck. There is no shared lexicon nor visual language that manifestly communicates either fight or flight. In the absence of overt symbols of combat and departure, what is presented are the discoveries of our curatorial research. Bay Area art is what Bay Area artists make. With that in mind, let's think through a few of the works. Almost all of them use novel and interesting techniques and materials and explore craft as an expanded term that includes materials, processes, and manual competency. The pieces. Object 1, Angela Hennessy, Bearings, 2021, Synthetic Hair, The Artist's Hair, Twist Tie Wire. As you enter the galleries, walk about 15 paces and turn to your left. Then walk another 5 and turn to face the wall on your left. You will encounter a long wall with 3 artworks. The first is a series of 3 horizontal shelves containing stacks of small printed booklets, created as a collaboration between artists Margaret Tedesco and Layla Weaver. You may take one of the booklets if you like. To the right of the shelves is a work by artist Angela Hennessy titled Bearings. This piece is approximately 4 feet wide by 4 feet tall. The entire piece is composed of 2 panels joined together that are unequal in size. The right panel is 3 feet wide and 4 feet long, while the left panel is only 1 foot wide and 3.5 feet long. The tops of the 2 panels are even and parallel with the floor, and the 2 panels are joined together as 1 asymmetrical work. The piece could loosely be described as a textile. It is made with traditional technique of crochet, a process of creating textiles by using a crochet hook to interlock loops of yarn, thread, or strands of other materials. Crochet translates to hook in French. The key difference between crochet and knitting is that each stitch in crochet is completed before the next one is begun, while knitting keeps many stitches open at one time. In this instance, the artist has used synthetic hair in a tight, curly texture as her main material. The artist has also incorporated pieces of her own hair, though it would be difficult to tell the synthetic from the real hair apart, as they are the same texture and color. The afro-textured jet black hair dangles in loose strands at the top left and top right corner, as if to show off that this crochet textile is in fact made from hair. Across the top, the hooked crochet pattern is evident. The pattern is a horizontal series of loops that join together, and the texture would feel similar to running your fingers over a very soft Afghan blanket. The left panel, which is the shorter side, consists of a vertical checkered pattern, which alternates between the hair and a series of hooked and looped golden twist ties, like the type that would be used to seal a package. The gold foil that lines the wire of the twist ties shines and catches the light, and as each segment of twist tie is loosely looped to the next one, it looks almost like a series of golden chain links lined up in a row. The twist ties are crocheted into the hair to create a checkerboard pattern, alternating between rectangles of jet black hair and sparkling gold. The longer right panel features vertical stripes that alternate between the hair and golden twist ties. Each stripe is about 2 inches thick. The hair is still crocheted in a tight horizontal pattern, mirroring the top and the left panel, even though the different materials form vertical stripes. The work hangs off from the wall by about an inch, and the lighting from above casts a shadow behind the work that shows the intricacy of the crocheted twist ties. Because there is so much space between each loop of the twist tie, their shadows are quite intricate on the wall between the work. Conceptually underpinning this work titled Bearings, Angela Hennessy draws upon the designs of maritime flags, objects that communicate ships' identities and status to guide mariners navigating oceans and seas. Different from the primary hues hoisted up to be seen from afar during stormy conditions, the tresses and bearings are somber black shades and gold tones. These are hair colors, both natural and artificial. They also bookend the range of skin tones of those who embrace the social and political designation people of color. Bearings emerges from Hennessy's thinking about brown and black people, the historical African diaspora, and the bodies of water which are characters in the stories of forced migration, dispersion, grief, melancholy, and survival. Born in Monterey, California, Hennessy lives in Oakland. She is an associate professor at California College of the Arts, where she earned Bachelor of Fine Arts and Master of Fine Arts degrees. She teaches the practice, theory, and history of textile art. A survivor of gun violence, Hennessy also teaches courses about cultural histories of death and dying, an area of research about which she also writes and organizes workshops. Object 2. Erica Demon, Being, 2023, Plaster of Paris, Sand, Acrylic Paint, Neon. Continuing along to the right and turning the corner, Erica Demon's Being is hung at eye level on the adjoining wall. The first thing you will notice about Being is a glowing white neon light at its center. In lowercase cursive letters, the word Being is molded out of glass tubes and illuminated. The neon word is about 1 foot wide and 6 inches tall. The color of neon signs is produced both by the color of the glass tube and the color of the gas used. The gas used to light this neon sign may be a mixture of the noble gases argon and krypton, which together can produce a creamy white glow. The neon sign is powered by electricity, and there are 2 thick black rubber wires that dangle from the bottom of the letter B and at the loop at the end of the cursive letter G. The wires connect to a discrete black converter box on the floor, which is about 1 foot long, 3 inches high, and 3 inches deep. The converter box is then plugged into an electrical socket on the wall beneath the piece by another thick black cord. The artist has left the wires and the converter box visible, perhaps to showcase the flow of energy and electricity into the neon itself, or to create a tension between the handmade artwork and the need for infrastructure to power it. If you lean in closely to the neon, you can hear it make a light buzzing sound. The neon sign is mounted in the center, as if it is floating, on top of a black backing in the shape of an elongated pentagon. The five sides of the pentagon are not equidistant, so the backing looks as if it has been stretched at the bottom left corner and pinched at the top right. The top and the right side have exaggerated corners, creating acute points. The piece is hung at eye level, and it is 3 feet high and 4 feet wide at its widest point. The surface of the backing is densely textured. A thick layer of plaster of Paris covers the surface, but it is not smooth nor even. Like cake frosting, the plaster of Paris swirls and crests like it was applied with a thin spatula. The plaster of Paris is painted a rich matte black color, the color of leather seats in a limousine. The nebulous black allows for the bright glow of the neon to be even more pronounced. As if forming a halo around the word, the glow on the backing encircles the neon. From afar, the texture of the plaster of Paris can look like the texture and color of natural afro-textured hair. This piece incorporates the ambiguous term being into a neon sign that casts light on its support. Plaster of Paris is made of dehydrated gypsum, a naturally occurring mineral mined throughout the United Kingdom, where Demon was born. In this work, the artist explores the complexity of this extraction, unearthing pieces of her own heritage and memories in the process. The plaster serves as a link between her relatives, who found work as miners after arriving in the UK from Jamaica, and an early memory of breaking her arm and healing in a plaster cast. Erica Demon moved to San Francisco from the United Kingdom to pursue her education, first at the Academy of Art, and later receiving her MFA from the University of California, Berkeley. The artist now splits her time between San Francisco and Seattle. She considers the Bay Area her creative home, but emphasizes the importance of movement, being in a state of suspension, as a way to channel the diaspora. Object 3. Libby Black, The Buildup, 2021, Paper, Paint, Pencil, and Glue. Following this wall all the way to the back corner, about 30 paces, a sculpture sits on top of a long, narrow, white pedestal. The pedestal is about 4 feet high, 4 feet long, and 2 feet wide. One side of the narrow 2-foot edge faces the visitor, and the other side butts up against the wall. Resting on top of the pedestal is a sculpture by artist Libby Black. The sculpture occupies about 1/4 of the surface area of the pedestals. It is centered on the narrow 2-foot edge of the pedestal, pushed toward the front so that it is closer to the viewer. Titled The Buildup and made of paper, paint, pencil, and glue, the sculpture is a stack of ersatz dishes and other objects that might pile up in a kitchen sink. From the bottom to the peak of the pile is about 2 feet high, and its diameter is a little over 1 foot. The entire pile sits first upon what appears to be a 12-inch enamelware plate, like dishes frequently used in camping gear and thus very sturdy. The plate is painted a mustardy dark yellow with white splotches throughout. Immediately atop the plate are what appears to be a slice of cantaloupe with a fork stuck in it, a toothbrush, a silver spoon and knife, an empty and tipped over can of strawberry-flavored sparkling water, and a steel cooking pot, the kind used to boil water for pasta, with two small handles on either side. Amazingly, all of these items are constructed out of paper. The work is not made from other paper processes, like papier-mâché. It is simply cut, folded, and glued together to create the impressively realistic shapes. The manipulation of the thick cardstock paper and meticulous application of paint together form a sort of trompe-l'œil. Translated from French, trompe-l'œil means deceiving the eye. The artist deceives the viewer into perceiving the objects depicted as real. Any item in the assortment could be mistaken at first glance for its functional counterpart. Each item is just a little smoother, a little less textured than the real deal. The can of sparkling water, for example, features a three-dimensional opened pop tab at the top and the label is an identical replica of the Waterloo sparkling water logo type and branding. The rind of the cantaloupe slice is painted to mimic the buff-colored net of ridges that make the melon's rind distinctive. The rind of the cantaloupe in the buildup is entirely smooth, however, providing a tell that the fruit is a facsimile. But the pile doesn't stop there. A blue disposable razor teeters as it nests in the curved handle of the steel cooking pot. Blocking the opening of the vessel, another enamel plate in the same mustard color tilts downward. Balancing on the plate is a turkey baster, the clear tube replaced as opaque and white, but the measurement markings are still clearly legible in this replica. A pair of open nail clippers bump up against the turkey baster. Sloping on top of the enamel plate is a gold sauté pan in which rests a metal spatula. Its flat, flipping end faces up, and a small paring knife precariously balances perpendicularly across the spatula slits. A metallic colander sits partially in the sauté pan, but the handle of the spatula prevents it from nesting fully into the cavity of the pan. The colander seems to want to topple forward onto the paring knife below it. A filthy men's cotton sock drapes over a handle from an unknown implement. Brown paint is applied to the sole of the sock to imply that it has been heavily worn and unwashed. The top layer, sitting in and about the colander, features a matching enamelware coffee mug, on top of which rests a red plastic pour-over coffee cone, in which sits one half of a ripe lemon cut lengthwise. A dish scrubbing brush, silver kitchen tongs with teal rubberized handles, and a bruised banana peel top off the pile. The entire pile is about 2 feet high, and there are two spotlights above it that cast two overlapping shadows on the pedestal. The shadow of the sauté pan's handle extends off the edge of the pedestal, and the shadows of the banana peel, tongs, and lemon at the top of the pile create a jumbled shadow shape. The pile appears to be teetering to the left, but is all held together as a single unit with glue. In fact, the piece can be lifted as a single unit and is shockingly stable. In the buildup, Libby Black identifies resonant symbols of the domestic sphere. This facsimiles of empty cans, housewares, dirty pots, and laundry prompts the question, who's going to clean up? Black's assemblage brings critique to gender roles and household tensions about the division of labor, matters exacerbated during the pandemic lockdown when more people had to stay home. A successful simulacra of the mundane, the buildup memorializes the artist's housebound days and weeks with her wife and their teenage son with humor. A Toledo, Ohio native, Libby Black earned a BFA in painting at the Cleveland Institute of Art in 1999. Afterward, she decided that she wanted to do her graduate studies in a queer city and applied to the California College of the Arts. Since finishing her MFA in painting at CCA in 2001, she has stayed in the Bay Area. Black is an assistant professor in the School of Art at San Francisco State University. She lives with her family in Berkeley. While noting that her family has experienced homophobia in the region, Black calls the region messy, an adjective that also could be applied to the buildup. This place is home, she has said. Object 4. Nasim Mokadam, Fabric, 2023, Broken Bottles of Beer and Wine, Still Wire. Turning 180 degrees from the buildup, and walking forward about 20 paces to the opposite wall, three works are hung on or near the wall in a neat row. All three look almost like two-dimensional paintings, but each of them are a little more complex than that. To the left is Charlene Tan's Research and Remembering, Reptile Ube. It has a deep purple background with richly colored purple powder outlining a pattern on the surface. To the right is Liz Hernandez's Un bordado es un documento número uno, 12 años en el área de la Bahía, or An embroidery is a document number one, 12 years in the Bay Area, which is an embroidered textile in a walnut frame. In the center of the three, hanging about 2 feet away from the wall, is Nassim Mokaddam's fabric. Mokaddam's work in the exhibition is made from shards of recycled beer and wine bottles linked together with wire to form an imposing rectangle. Titled Fabric, the wire and cut shards of glass are imagined in relationship to a body, cloaking or covering like a blanket, suggesting both comfort and danger. The artwork hangs from the ceiling, connected at 3 points from the top left, right, and center. Between the hanging points, the materials drape, creating soft U shapes in between each hanging point. The high ceilings at the museum are 24 feet tall, so the three connecting wires are visible. Beneath the artwork is a 6-inch-high white platform. The piece hangs about 3 feet above the platform, so the center of the work is about 60 inches or 5 feet from the floor. While the title suggests a textile, this work is far from it. Although it languidly drapes between the three hanging points, as if it were made of a soft material, the work is actually composed of hundreds of pieces of broken beer and wine bottles held together by thin wire. The piece is about 4 feet long and a little less than 4 feet wide. Almost square, it could bring to mind a blanket or cloak from afar. As you near the piece, the irregular shards of broken glass become more clear. Each shard of glass has a different shape. Some are sharp and pointed. Some curve in on themselves, suggesting they came from the taper of a bottle's neck. And some have the distinctive ridged, rounded corners of the base of a beer bottle. A few shards even have a silk-screened Corona label still visible. The shards are all variations of amber-colored glass. Some pieces are a deep caramel brown, while some fall closer to toffee or gold on the spectrum. Each individual shard has at least 4 holes drilled into its edges where the artist has connected each piece to the next with thin wire. She wraps the wire around itself to secure the connection, but leaves the pointed ends of each piece of wire out, giving the appearance and sharpness of barbed wire. The connecting wire leaves approximately 1/2 inch of negative space between each shard, making the work look more like a sieve or fishing net than a solid piece of fabric. This negative space creates a fascinating shadow on the wall behind. The piece is lit from left, right, and center, creating 3 angles of shadow, with the most prominent directly behind the piece. Given the translucency of the glass, the shadow itself retains the amber and brown colors of the shards. The color provides an interesting contrast to the deep purple of the piece to its left. Iranian-born art educator and multidisciplinary visual artist Nassim Mokaddam moved to the Bay Area in 2010. Her work focuses on discrimination, hyphenated identity, and the constraints on women, their bodies, and their voices. Mokaddam's work creates narratives inspired by the efforts of women worldwide who are defending their basic, unalienable rights. When discussing her artwork and living in the Bay Area, Mokaddam mentioned the struggle of studio space and affordability. But for her, the weight of community care is greater than the complications of living here. She has found a welcoming community and feels she wouldn't be able to express the themes and concepts within her work if it weren't for having moved to the Bay Area. Wrapping up. There are 25 additional works in the exhibition, ranging from ceramic sculptures, embroidery, glass, textiles, and installations. While the works do not share a common visual lexicon, all speak to the resiliency of their makers and their stories of living in an untenable city. For a long time, artists have resourcefully crafted a life in the Bay Area. For some of those who decide to move on, the careers and relationships started here are central to their sensibilities as makers. Who is a Bay Area artist? It is the artist who has been nurtured here. Many of this exhibition's participants studied art at Bay Area schools, including California College of the Arts, Mills College, the San Francisco Art Institute, Stanford University, and the University of California, Berkeley. Some have taken on teaching and administration jobs at their alma maters and at other outposts of the Bay Area cultural industry, in museums, galleries, libraries, and archives. Few have one gig. Artists labor so that they can make work and live here, a radical act of insistence that it's worth the struggle to stay. The Bay Area stays with the artists who have come of age or made their careers here. In Infinite City, Rebecca Solnit writes that places are leaky containers. They always refer beyond themselves. In fact, some of the artists in this exhibition have recently taken leave of the Bay Area, yet they maintain their connection to the region, taking its ideals with them to the next place. Exhibitions are advocacy, and Fight and Flight is no exception. We take a stand for craft, a category frequently marginalized or footnoted in art history. To survive and thrive in the margins is a radical act that occasionally requires the will to fight. By the simple act of replacing or with and, Fight and Flight suggests a broader spectrum of response. There are many more artists whose stories we know, whose work we wish we had the space to present in this exhibition. We hold space for them here. Artists, craftspeople, and makers that have crafted their lives here and have written their parts of the Bay Area's history. We hope you've enjoyed these audio descriptions of selected works. We also have haptic touch tours available upon request by calling 415-773-0303 or emailing tours, T-O-U-R-S, at sfmcd.org.